Well, beloved listeners, at any time in recent years, you could have, had you so wished, rented an Airbnb-listed property in a number of Israeli settlements in the West Bank. That's West Bank, Palestine. In fact, you still can. Now, given that the ownership of that accommodation is disputed and highly politicised, these Airbnb listings have been, not surprisingly, controversial. Palestinians and human rights groups argue that because most countries in the world accept that under international law, Israeli settlers should not even be in the West Bank, they should not, therefore, be renting out their properties to visitors or tourists. So in November last year, Airbnb responded to pressure by announcing it was delisting those properties in the contested West Bank settlements. Now that sparked outrage and litigation against Airbnb in both Israel and the US. Now in one of the cases, 12 American Jewish families who had West Bank property connections said Airbnb's decision discriminated against them. And last month, Airbnb reversed its decision. Now, I hope you're paying attention because the story gets even more complicated. Airbnb said it had reached a settlement in that case and several others and would now once again list properties in those settlements. Meanwhile, some Palestinians launched an historic counterclaim in an American court. On the assumption that you're still with me, let me introduce you to Mayrav Zonshine, who's going to take us through this extraordinary saga. Mayrav is an Israeli-American journalist whose byline you might have seen in the Wash Post, the New York Review of Books, and she's writing about this for The Nation. And Mayrav now joins us from Los Angeles, where she's based. A warm welcome to you. Great to have you on the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
As I mentioned in your intro, Airbnb has, stopped advertising homes in the settlements, or rather said they'd stop advertising. And this was after some sustained pressure from the likes of Human Rights Watch.
Right. They actually never pulled down the listings ever. They only announced that they had an intention to change their policy. That's what they said in November, and they never took a single listing down.
I must say that's a very interesting tactic that Zuckerberg and others could employ. We promise we'll do something in the distant future.
I mean, what's kind of ridiculous is that they didn't even do anything, and they were already, you know, in these legal battles. And part of the issue here, if we can get to it as well, which makes it more complicated, is that there's a very big difference between boycotting settlements and boycotting Israel more generally, which is part of a larger Palestinian-led movement of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And both in Israel and the U.S., there is an effort to equate those two things, as if somebody who decides to not buy a settlement product is also somebody who identifies with the BDS movement, which is a separate issue. So this is also part of the story.
Talking to Mayrav Zonshine, and in one of the more complex stories we've tackled on LNL on RN. So the claim, the intention to delist did not satisfy a lot of people, and the litigants argued what?
You're talking about the settlers who sued? They were claiming that they were being discriminated against as if the pulling, I mean, you have to keep in mind, Airbnb has at least 13,000 listings across Israel and is very popular there. And we're talking about only 200 listings that are, you know, inside occupied West Bank. Some of these are places where the land that it's on can actually be proven to be owned by Palestinians that still hold the land deeds. So they were arguing that if they aren't allowed to either host or rent in these places, that is discrimination by Airbnb against them as Jews.
And this is under the U.S. Fair Housing Act?
Correct.
Now, as I understand, the Fair Housing Act was a critical piece of civil rights era legislation passed way back in 1968.
That's right. It was part of the civil rights era. It was part of the way in which blacks were protesting and trying to get equal rights in housing. So, you know, in that sense, this is even more cynical and kind of enraging because Israeli American citizens who have properties in the occupied West Bank are highly privileged and they're profiting off of it. So, you know, to claim that they're being discriminated against is really enraging. And that, I think, is what really prompted the Palestinian individuals to try to file this intervening counterclaim.
Now, complicating what is already complicated, there was a Palestinian intervention in the case, and that is a first.
Yeah, so this intervening lawsuit is the first ever legal challenge in the United States in a U.S. court by Palestinians against the settlement enterprise. And the charges that were brought in this case are both under the Fair Housing Act. They are being, as Palestinians, discriminated against because if your viewers aren't aware, Palestinians who were born in the West Bank cannot enter those settlements, either because they will be stopped by a security guard if they live in the West Bank, or if they live elsewhere and try to get in, they won't be let in unless they have a very special permit by Israeli authorities, which is, you know, quite rare. And then the other charges that were brought in court were under international humanitarian law that have to do with the Geneva Convention, which says that moving citizens into occupied territory under what is supposed to be a temporary military occupation is illegal under international law. So these were the charges.
Tell me about the Center for Constitutional Rights.
The Center for Constitutional Rights is a legal firm that represents, you know, various clients that have to do with civil rights and human rights. They do a lot of advocacy for Palestinians. They do many, many different things. They also have activists who have actually recently tried to go in a delegation to Israel-Palestine and were prevented from entering by the Israeli authorities. So that's another interesting story.
They've told you that the settlers' lawsuit is, quote, a cynical use of an important civil rights statute.
That's right. And one of the Palestinian Americans who is involved in this case, she has family in Jerusalem. She was born in the West Bank and she's an American citizen. And, you know, she spoke to me about the importance of doing this strictly, not on the legal basis, even just on the basis of, you know, understanding how upsetting it is that, you know, to be a Palestinian American citizen and have people who don't let her enter the place where she was born tell her that they're being discriminated against under American civil rights law.
It is a staggering idea that Palestinian residents of the West Bank, even those with an American passport, are barred from living in or even visiting Israeli settlements unless they have this very special and rarely issued permit.
That's right. And, you know, Airbnb markets itself as an inclusive, diverse, company that tries to bring people together through hosting people in apartments. So it's even more cynical and ridiculous because, you know, what's interesting to note also is that when they gave their announcement on the update that they will not actually make good on their promise and they will actually retract their intention to pull these listings, they announced that the profits that they make off of each of these listings will not go to them, but will go to other nonprofit organizations that do humanitarian work in other parts of the world. So they're still profiting, but they're going to give those profits to other groups, not even to Palestinian advocacy groups.
Got it. Now, the Jewish litigants celebrated a victory.
Yes. It's also important to know that the settlers that were represented in court in the U.S., it was by an attorney in the U.S., but also by a group called Shurat Hadin, which is an Israeli NGO that basically is notorious for filing lawsuits to combat the BDS movement. So this is a whole other, you know, part of the story.
Okay, it's time to bring another organization into the discussion or another campaign, and that's BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. Fit that into the puzzle.
So the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, just very quickly, was started in about 2005. It's a Palestinian-led civil organizational movement. It has, you know, you can look on its website for its principles. They include the right of return for refugees from across the world and equal rights for all Palestinians living anywhere between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. And this has become a very hot topic in the U.S., and there are now 27 states in the U.S. that are passing various forms of anti-BDS legislation.
That is a measure of some sort of success, isn't it?
Yes, it has been very successful, and Israel has done both, you know, has invested a lot of money and resources and time into creating this campaign that is now, we're seeing, very successful in the U.S.
And Airbnb clearly wanted to distance itself from the boycott movement.
That's right. In all of its press announcements, it has emphasized that it does not boycott Israel and does not endorse the BDS movement. And in fact, it has never done anything to boycott Israel or endorse the BDS movement. However, Israeli and American pro-Israel advocates who are very conservative have tried to link them and put them together. And what we see is that a company that has actually made some effort to fall more in line with human rights principles has actually found it to be quite damaging to try and do so. And I believe that the company has reached the conclusion that it would both politically and economically suffer if it decided to pull those 200 listings. So the effort has, yes, is very successful.
So Airbnb was targeted directly?
Yes, both by Israeli government efforts, calling the move anti-Semitic, as well as Republicans in the U.S. And there are several states that have put Airbnb on a blacklist, which is a consequence of this legislation that's been passing, like places in Texas and a few other states. And the blacklist means that if Airbnb cannot prove that it doesn't boycott Israel in any way, then it will suffer economic consequences. So I believe that was a big part of its decision to not go through with the pulling out of these settlements.
As the headline to one of your articles in The Nation put it, Airbnb caved. Now, I have to ask you this. Israel has re-elected Prime Minister Netanyahu, who announced prior to his election that he would annex the West Bank settlements. So I wonder how that might affect Airbnb's concession.
Right. I mean, you know, in my milieu, it's pretty clear that in some ways, de facto, the West Bank has already been, or at least large parts of it, have already been annexed because of things like Airbnb's freedom of, you know, action in that area, or universities that have now been built and accredited there. So, of course, it would be a very big difference to actually annex it the way that Israel has annexed the Golan Heights and East Jerusalem. It would actually be not in Israel's interests, because then there would be many more channels, legal channels, for Palestinians to go through to penalize Israel for this move. So, you know, it would make it even more difficult for Airbnb to defend its policy, but it would also open up Israel to many more legal challenges.
And this week, of course, there were military strikes against Gaza. Airbnb properties there?
That's a good question. I'm not aware, certainly not any Israelis, because they're no longer there, but, you know, there could be listings by Palestinians.
We checked the Airbnb website, and it says there are 129 properties to rent in Gaza, but I'm not sure of the exact addresses. Mayrav, thank you very much. You've done a sterling job explaining this to me, and I hope the listeners could follow the arguments. Mayrav Sunshine, Israeli-American journalist who's written about this for The Nation, and as I said, she's also written for The New York Times, The Washington Post, and my beloved New York Review of Books. And beloved listeners, if you are interested in knowing more about the settler perspective, you can find a link on our website to Shuret Hayden, the law office in Israel that worked on this case for the Israeli settlers.